Father, we thank you for your Shabbat and we thank you for your Torah. And I pray that all of our hearts and minds will be open to understand what you have said, what you meant when you said it, and to change our hearts to comply with you, Father. And I pray that every word that I speak will be from you and that nothing will be from me, not because it's me, but because it's you and it's about your kingdom. And I just ask that you be with us in our midrash today in Yeshua's name. Amen. Okay, so this week's Torah portion I have titled, Torah is Love. I have heard often in my life that those who enforce the law are, and in fact, this has been leveled at me, that, you know, well, you want to do this law thing, that's unloving. The law is unloving. This is something that I've heard. And in fact, some Hebrew Roots people no longer study the Torah because they believe love is only taught by Yeshua in the New Testament, or that those who love the law and want themselves and others to live by the law are in some way unloving. So they have now, you know, gone to the New Testament to figure out what love is. And in fact, we've had a few years ago, we had a bunch of people leave Hebrew Roots and go back into the church. But this thinking about the law, that the law is unloving and it's harsh and hard, is wrong thinking. And it is what the church, the Catholic Church originally, accused the law of being. And the reason why that was is because Catholicism introduced Catholic means universal. So they created an institution that was inclusive of all the gods of Rome and in the Near East, along with Yahweh, our Elohim, and they lumped them all together. And because of the writings of the church fathers in the first century, they could not get away from Yeshua as the Messiah, so they incorporated him as the Messiah and said that he did away with the law. So that's how that came about. But the law is not unloving, harsh, and hard. The law is all about love. Love is built into the law. Love is the reason for the law. And it shows us how to love Yahweh and others according to Yahweh's definition of love. So the subject of love is found in all four chapters of this week's Torah portion. Yahweh defines love differently than we human beings. We have personal definitions of love, and everyone's personal definition is probably somewhat different than someone else's definition, though not always. For instance, if you do something to me and I like it, that's love. But if you do something to me and I don't like it, you're harsh and hard and not loving. So if you commit a sin and I tell you that you've committed a sin, now I'm harsh and hard and unloving. And that becomes the definition that people go by. But Yahweh's definition of love is different. It doesn't have to do with our personal preferences or what we like or our emotions. Yahweh's definition of love is all about action, doing. And actually, this word today comes from the word asah. Asah means do. Now we're going to examine this word today for later on, but the word do is the word asah, and Yahweh's definition of love has to do with what we do, not what we think, our opinions, or how we feel. It has to do with actions. So this Torah portion mentions the love of God, the love between God and Israel, 7 times. The book of Deuteronomy mentions the love of God between God and Israel 23 times. So let's examine, how is Torah love? Well, 1 John 4:8 and verse 16 says that God is love. We have all heard that. God is love. But the Torah is called by John the Word. Yeshua is the Word, so he is the Torah. And so the Word, the Torah, is God. Therefore, both God and the Torah are love. Therefore, the Torah is love. The Torah teaches us love going in 2 directions. The love of the Father and the love that we have toward each other. And he defines love according to our behaviors that he says speak love to him. And he defines our behaviors towards others that speak love to others. And when he sees us do them, he believes that we're doing love. Whether the other person thinks we're being harsh and hard to them or not, Yahweh is saying, no, that's love. That's how he defines love. And so here's a principle. If we are living according to the Torah, the law, our actions speak love. Whether or not we actually feel the emotion of love when we do those actions. By the way, there are times when we will not have the emotion of love, or even that we like doing what Yahweh says we need to do. But we just put that emotion aside and go ahead and do the action, and then that is doing love. That's what Yahweh says love is. So let's examine Yahweh's love for Israel. Deuteronomy 4:37 says, because he loved your fathers, he chose their offspring after them. In Deuteronomy 7:7-9, it says, Yahweh did not set his love on you or choose you because you were more in number than any other people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because Yahweh loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he swore to your fathers. By the way, we all depend on Yahweh keeping his word, don't we? That's why he has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know, therefore, that Yahweh your God, he is God, the faithful God. By the way, I'm going to add in here that we should be understanding that he is our only God. In fact, that's what he says. Loving him means you will have no other gods before you. So not only is he our God, he is God, he is faithful God, he is our only God, which keeps covenant and mercy with us that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. So notice that Yahweh's definition of love is that it is a two-way street. One of the things the church falsely teaches is that, you know, he loves you and you don't have to do anything except, you know, say with your mouth, you know, confess with your mouth that, you know, Jesus is the Messiah. But that's not true. It's a two-way street. He is faithful. He keeps covenant and has mercy with those that love him by keeping his commandments. In fact, this love from him to us causes him, I'm sorry, this love from us to him, rather, causes him to love our offspring to the thousandth generation. And hang on, I'm going to share with you a special blessing for our offspring because we keep the commandments. Deuteronomy 7:13 says, "And he will love you. He will bless you and multiply you." And by the way, when it says he will love you, it means that he will do everything in his law that he said he's going to do for you. His law defines his love for us. He will bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your grain, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle, the flocks of your sheep, in the land which he swore to your fathers to give to you. So Yahweh, doing these actions that he swore in his law that he would do for us, those are love, and those are evidence. When we see that happen, those are evidence of his love for us. In Deuteronomy 6:4, he says, "Hear, Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." See, it goes back now from us to him. "These words which I command you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them for a sign on your hand, and they shall be for frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." In verse 6, he says, "They shall be on your heart." Some versions say, "in your heart." I'm going to share with you later on the connection between hearing in verse 4 and your heart in verse 6. And that's coming up too. Deuteronomy 11:13, which is not in this Torah portion, says, "It shall happen if you listen diligently." So there's a condition there. If you listen, if you shema, hear and do diligently my commandments, which I command you today, to love Yahweh your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, I will give the rain of your land in its season, the former rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. In other words, you're going to have food security, something which the world now is beginning to not have, food security. And he said, "I will give grass in the fields for your livestock, and you shall eat," what? "Your livestock, and you shall be full." So you shall eat everything, your grain, your new wine, your oil, and your livestock, and you shall be full. So notice that receiving food security, along with everything else, requires our obedience. It requires that we shema, hear, and do. Unlike the law, unlike the lie that the church teaches, Yahweh doesn't just give us his blessings and bestow blessings on those who do not love him. He does require something in return, and what he requires is our obedience. So you can see that Yahweh's definition of love is entirely different than what people think constitutes love. Excuse me. I said that I would get to a special promise for our offspring. So here's the special promise. It goes to Deuteronomy 30, chapter 1, and ends at verse 6. "It shall happen when all these things," have come on you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you. And you call them to mind among all the nations where Yahweh your God has driven you, and return to Yahweh your God, and obey his voice according to all that I command you today, you and your children, with all your heart and with all your soul, that then Yahweh will release you from captivity. He will have compassion on you, and he will return and gather you from all the peoples where Yahweh your God has scattered you. If your outcasts are in the outermost parts of the heavens, from there Yahweh your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you back. Yahweh your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed, and you will possess it. And he will do you good and increase your numbers more than your father. So right there we've got all these blessings to the end time generation. And only the end time generation can have outcasts who are in the outermost parts of the heavens. Where are they? Well, they're up there floating around in outer space in the space station for one place. Anyway, let's go to verse 6 and let's hear the special blessing he has for our offspring if we keep his commandments. Yahweh your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring. And the heart of your offspring. How many of us pray for our offspring? How many of us pray that the Lord Yahweh will circumcise the heart of our offspring? And how many of us are praying for him to circumcise our heart? I know I am. I want him to circumcise the heart of my offspring, which will result in the rest of the verse, to love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. That you may live what? An eternal life, folks. This is not just about our physical life. This is his promise that if we will circumcise our hearts, saying, let me do as much as I can to be obedient, rather than let me interpret the law to see what I have to do, and then I will do the minimum which is required. No, that's not what he said. He said, do all of his law. So which is it that Yahweh wants? Wholehearted or half-hearted? It is to the wholehearted. Those who say, oh, I see a law here. Let me go ahead and obey that, even if I don't understand it. And even if I don't agree with it, let me just go ahead with that. That is wholehearted. And his promise then is that he will cause our offspring to love him. Now that is quite a promise. Now here is our love for Yahweh. Here's what we must do to show Yahweh that we love him. We must keep his law, as I just read. And again, in another Torah portion, in chapter 10, verse 12, it says, now Israel, what does Yahweh your God require of you but to fear Yahweh your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him and to serve Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul, to keep Yahweh's commandments and statutes, meaning his mitzvah, the entire collection of statutes and judgments, which I command you today, which are what? For your good. Our love for Yahweh also includes not adding to and subtracting from his law. Deuteronomy 4:2. You shall not add to the word which I command you, neither shall you take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of Yahweh, your God, which I command you. Well, interpreting the law is the easiest and best way to add to or subtract from the law. And what is interpretation? It is personal opinion. It is me deciding that, well, what this really means is, rather than just doing what it says. It's personal opinion, abandoning what Yahweh said and what He meant when He said it. There is a book, a huge book, that is interpretation, and that book is called the Talmud. It is what the Jews study as law and teach as law. It is their interpretations. And in the Talmud, you get everybody's opinion. You know, this sage says that. This rabbi says something else. This person over here says something else. And, you know, in the Talmud, if you read the Talmud, you get to hear all of these personal opinions, these interpretations. That is what we are to not do. What we are to do is when we see a law, we're to take it at its basic premise, not adding anything to it or taking anything away from it, and just go ahead and do it, even if it hurts. Doing the law speaks love to Yahweh. Not interpreting, not agreeing necessarily, not needing to understand, not needing to debate, just doing. That is His definition of love, and Israel has never lived up to His definition of love to this day. Now, I told you that I was going to put together for you how hearing and the heart go together. Because in the Shema that we say, it says, "Hear, O Israel, put this in your heart." So I'm going to do some explanation of this before I get to the real climactic moment, shall we say. Because Yahweh tells His people to hear His word. In Deuteronomy 4:1, hear Israel. In Deuteronomy 4:36, out of heaven He made you to hear His voice. Deuteronomy 5:1, Moses said, hear Israel. Do these things. Observe to do them. Listen and hear are the words Shema, and as I've said, it means hear and do. And we are told why we are supposed to hear and do. The purpose of it is in verse 2, chapter 4, verse 2, so that you may live, first of all, it's going to let you live. And you're going to go into the land and you're going to possess the land. Meaning, when you possess the land, you remain on the land in perpetuity. And you don't go into exile, as we have been for 2,700 years. But here is the reason why hearing and the heart go together. Hearing is embedded in the brainstem, in the same place that regulates your heart, your breathing. Now, this is a part of our physical world, and Yahweh made us this way. He made it so that our hearing goes through the midbrain, through the cochlea, through the midbrain, past the pons, and it's seated in the medulla oblongata, what is sometimes called the brain stem or the reptile brain. But this is why Yahweh says hear, not see. He built us this way for this purpose, and it has to do with the way he made our brain to function. In the medulla oblongata is the seat also of our instincts. It's where the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems are. You don't have to think about your heartbeat and say, okay, heartbeat. And you don't have to think about your breathing. Okay, lungs, it's time to breathe. That stuff happens automatically. When we make when we make his word come into us through hearing and not try to make it come through seeing, what we are doing is voluntarily hardwiring his law so that they become part of our instincts and part of our automatic function. Hearing is where the heart function is. That's why he says, hear, and then he says, this must be your heart. So he wants us to voluntarily make his word become part of our instincts and part of our automatic responses. His words are to be inborn in us, so to speak, like the instincts. And we must voluntarily allow that to happen. That's why he says here, Israel, and don't see. And I'm going to talk about some things that he says that we are to see. But I want to talk first about the cerebral cortex, the most frontal part of the brain. That is where sight and touch are rooted, is in the cerebral cortex. Actually, sight and touch go back to the midbrain, which the audio signals from hearing pass through the midbrain and go on back into the medulla oblongata. But it's in the cerebral cortex where we have the functions of sight and touch. It's where we learn about where our body is positioned in relation to other things. It helps us to walk. And of course, what's going on in our inner ear is also involved in that positioning. So the brain is kind of a complex mechanism. It's a complex creation, if you will. But what I'm trying to show you is that there is a reason why he says hear his word and not to try to see his word with pictures. This Torah portion starts with images. Moses is talking about images, and it ends with Moses talking about images. And in between, we have talk of images and other things along with that. So we are to hear the word so it becomes a part of us, so that it becomes part of our automatic nature. Yahweh said in Psalm 1:2, we are to hear and listen to his law and meditate on it day and night, just as he said in this week's Torah portion. But now, here is what Yahweh wants us to see. Because there are things he wants us to see. He doesn't want us to go around with our eyes closed. But there are some things he doesn't want our eyes to see. But first, we're going to talk about what he wants us to see. And it starts in Deuteronomy 4:3. Your eyes have seen what Yahweh did because of Baal Peor. For all the men who followed Baal Peor, your God, has destroyed them from among you. But you who are faithful to Yahweh your God are all alive today. Yahweh wants us to see with our eyes what his heard word in action can do. So in other words, we hear his words and then our eyes become the witness to what was heard. I'm going to give you a bunch of scriptures to show you this. So this is what it's for. For us Israelites, it's not seeing first and then hearing. It's hearing first and then seeing as a witness. In the world, it's the other way around. But we humans are stuck on seeing. You know, we have these big family Bibles, and in there we have, you know, pictures of Noah's Ark and Moses on Mount Sinai and Daniel in the lion's den. And we think when we look at those pictures that we're actually learning more than when we would hear the words from the law, from the scriptures being spoken. And that is not correct. Humans manipulate and interpret according to their personal preferences what they see more than they do what they hear. This is because hearing, again, is hardwired, and it's more stable than seeing. And I'm going to draw an analogy, and I don't know if, you know, you can all still hear me, because I'm getting announcements here on my screen that says there may be internet trouble here, but hearing is hardwired. It's like hardwired internet. Seeing is like Wi-Fi, and seeing is less stable. The 10 spies saw the Anakim and made a wicked decision from what they saw rather than doing what they heard. Now, people will say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, no. A picture is worth 1,000 words, but look, no 1,000 words can explain or reveal Yahweh our Elohim. Thus, pictures actually limit our understanding of Him. What we need is to hear Him say what He's going to do and then see what He does so that pictures don't lead us astray. Deuteronomy 4:12 begins to show us what we did not see. But before we go to that, I'm going to go to some scriptures that show us how the hearing comes first and then comes the seeing. And I'm going to use the word for see, which is Ra'ah. It's Strong's H7200. And the first use of that is in Genesis 1:4. It says, God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. But what came before Genesis 1:4? Well, Genesis 1:3. God said, God spoke, let there be light. And there was light. So when there is speaking, there is hearing. Hearing comes first and then seeing. God saw the light and then He verified something about the light, that it was good. So seeing the light was His witness that what He spoke and what happened was verified. Genesis 2:19. Out of the ground, Yahweh Elohim formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them to Adam to see Ra'ah, what he would call them, and whatever Adam called every living creature, that was the name of it. So Yahweh brought the animals to Adam so Adam's sight could verify that Yahweh had created those animals. And then Yahweh honored Adam with being able to name those animals. So Adam naming the animals was visual verification that Yahweh had created those animals. Genesis 8:8. Noah used seeing to verify the condition of the earth. He sent out the bird to see what had happened on the earth, to verify the condition of the earth, by sight. Genesis 11:5. God came to the earth to see, to verify what he was hearing that was going on at the Tower of Babel. And again, that happened in Genesis 18:21, when God came to verify what he heard from the outcry of the people in Sodom. He went to see. Seeing verifies what you hear. Genesis 3:6, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit of it and ate and gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. So Genesis 3:6 is the first time that the sense of sight was used first, and it was used to satisfy the desire of the flesh. Genesis 6:2, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. So, leading with the sight instead of leading with hearing leads to desire, lust, and coveting. Coveting happens because of our eyes. Genesis 12:12. Abram feared the Egyptians would see and lust after Sarai and then kill him. And on it goes. So the point is, Yahweh reserves seeing to verify his glory, his beauty, and his magnitude of himself as our Creator, our God, our King, the host of his armies, and that he is able to preserve our life and provide for our life and take care of all his creation. Our sight is for the verification of what we have heard from the law. Deuteronomy 4:7 says, "For what nation is there so great who has God so near to them as Yahweh our Elohim is in all things that we call on him for? What great nation is there that has statutes and ordinances so righteous as all his law, which I set before you today? But be careful and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes saw," which your eyes verified at Mount Sinai, "and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life." See, there's the heart and the hearing again. "And make them known to your children and your children's children in the day that you stood before Yahweh your God in Horeb, when Yahweh said to me, 'Assemble the people to me, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they live on the earth.'" Did the people ever hear the voice of God speaking out of the middle of the fire, as you have heard and live? Did any other people ever hear that? No. Or has God tried to go and take a nation for himself from among any other nation by trials, signs, wonders, war, a mighty hand, an outstretched arm, and terrors, according to all that Yahweh your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? See, he spoke and told Moses what he was going to do, and then he showed them to their eyes. He showed what he told them in their hearing, and they verified it with their eyes. And I'm going to say that verse 35 verifies what I just told you. It was shown to you so that you might know that Yahweh is God and there is no one else besides him. So our eyesight is for the purpose of seeing what Yahweh does for us, because he says he's going to do it in his law, because the law is his love for us. It is not for us to create objects, images, that draw our hearts away from Him. He did His mighty works before our eyes so that our eyesight would verify what He told us in our hearing that He would do for us so that we can know Him. And there are some things that He wants us to see. And I'm going to go and get those things now if I can find them. What does He want us to see? Well, come on, Kimberly. I can't find that. Okay, since I can't find that, I'm not going to be able to go back to it. But here's what you did not see. In Deuteronomy 4:12, you saw no form, no tamuna. You only heard a voice, it says there in verse 12. In Deuteronomy 4:15, you saw no form, tamuna, on the day that Yahweh spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. And in he says, be very careful in verse 15, for you saw no tamuna on the day that Yahweh spoke to you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you corrupt yourselves and make, that word is asah, yourself. So make or asah yourself a carved image, pestle, in the form of a tamuna or the likeness, tabnit, of male or female. In verse 17, the likeness, the tabnit, the pattern. Tabnit means pattern. Of any animal that is on the earth, the likeness, the tabnit or pattern of any winged figure that flies in the sky. The likeness, tabnit, pattern of anything that creeps on the ground. The likeness, tabnit, pattern of any fish that is in the water under the earth. So this, you know, the tabernacle and the temple were shown to Moses and David as tabnit, pattern, blueprints. We're not even to have the blueprints. Now, that word tabnit does not show up in Exodus 20, verses 4 and 5, where he instructs us to not make, which is all by itself in the scroll. Exodus 20, verse 4 says, do not make pestle or tamuna of anything in the sky above or in the earth or in the beneath the earth, in the water. So that stands by itself, and there's a period behind that. And what we tend to do is interpret and say, well, but that means if we intend to bow to or worship that image, you know, if we're not intending to do that, then, you know, then it's going to be okay. We can have those. So here, though, in Deuteronomy 4, Yahweh puts an even further hedge around images by saying, don't even have a pattern of them. You know, don't make an actual image. Don't even make a pattern to make an image, like, you know, a mold to put mud in or ceramics or hot molten metal. No line drawings or blueprints of those things are we allowed to have. Now, that word asah appears a whopping 2,633 times in scriptures. And it is used in a wide variety of English applications. And those English applications, there are 84 different ones. But here are the English words that apply, that you can apply very easily to asahing, if I can, you know, kind of use that word, asahing, making, which actually that word means do. It does not mean make. One of its meanings is make, but here are some other meanings for that word, asah, which means do, accomplish, advance, appoint, bring forth, be busy with, have the charge of, deal with, deck or dress, fashion, finish, follow, fulfill, furnish, gather, get, go about, be industrious, keep, maintain, make, observe, be occupied with, bring or cause to come to pass, perform, practice, prepare, procure, provide, put, yield, and use. Asah is an action word that means to do something with an object or to do something in a situation. To not asah means to do nothing with the object or to do nothing in that situation. And in this case, the objects are images, statue or pestle, tamuna, which is a general word for under which all the other types, it's a general word for image, but there are types of images in the scripture under which they fall under the general term, tamuna, and then, of course, tabnit. We are to not do anything with pesel, tamuna, or tabnit, with the exception of one thing. God does make an exception of what we can and must do with images, which is destroy them. And I have 31 scriptures from Exodus 23 all the way through Micah 5 to show that that's what he has said, that we're to destroy them. And in fact, in Jeremiah 51:47 and 51:42, he says he's going to do judgment on the images. It's not just going to be judgment on people, it's going to be judgment on the images. So in Exodus 20, verses 4 and 5, we get general commands about images. But Yahweh never gives us a reason or an explanation for any possible motives that people may have to make or have or get or use or any other of those words an image. So people have their own reasoning regarding images, and here's what they say. If you don't intend to bow or serve to the image, it's okay to have it. Well, Yahweh did not say that, did he? He said, do not asah, do not have anything to do with, make use of, accomplish, advance, appoint, bring forth, be busy with, not have charge of, deal, fashion, furnish, gather, get, keep, maintain, make, be occupied with, prepare, procure, provide, use. Did he not say, do not add to the scriptures? Do not asah, do not make images. Romans 1:22 said, Paul said, well, before I go to what Paul said, Yahweh tells us why we are not to, are you having trouble hearing somebody? Can anybody hear me? Okay.
Really bad, Kimberly. It's been really, really bad. Ever since you first started talking about hearing, you can't hear you.
Okay. Okay.
Very, very bad.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for that. I'm going to put the transcript up there, but I'm going to continue now with Deuteronomy 4:19. The reason that he says...
I was wondering, would it help if maybe logged out and back in? I don't know.
I doubt it. It's got to do with our lag here with our internet.
Oh, you're better now.
Okay, so he says that in Deuteronomy 4:19, what he said was his reasoning why he said don't have images in your lives is because lest you lift up your eyes to the sky and to the and you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the army of the sky, you'll be drawn away and worship them and serve them. Which, by the way, in the past I have said that's, you know, the sun, the moon, and the stars are Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Romans 1:22, Paul says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and traded the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up to the lusts of their hearts, to uncleanness, that their bodies should be dishonored among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. That is the danger. That's what Yahweh said here in verse 19 of chapter 4, that this is the danger of allowing ourselves to maintain having images in our lives, to try to teach people the scriptures through images, to keep our images in the forms of statues, 3Ds and 2Ds, tumuna, and even line drawings. And look, you know, why do we have so much knowledge today about the human body in science? It started with Da Vinci's line drawings of the human anatomy. I'm sure that there were other line drawings of human anatomy before Da Vinci, but he made them really famous. And the Lord said, don't do that. So now today, we're in a situation where people who have learned from line drawings about Yahweh's creation of the human, that now they can hack the human. This is how dangerous imagery is to Yahweh's people. And by the way, what's now coming is, we recently, in the last 2 weeks, have had something that we haven't had in the last 2,700 years. Bull worship happened in the UK. They pulled out a statue of a great big bull, and people were worshiping around it. And the people in the stands at this soccer game, I guess it was a soccer game, were just up there watching it happen. Well, you know what? If you're watching it happen, Yahweh thinks that you're participating. Because not everybody participated at the golden calf. The Levites, we know, were not punished for the golden calf in the same way that the firstborns were. They were allowed to be substituted for the firstborns. But there were those who did not participate in the golden calf worship, but they did not stop it. And they did not turn their backs on it. And they continued to watch it, just like those people in the stands there at that game in the UK. Look, the law is our wisdom, it says here in Deuteronomy 4:6. So we need to be wise with what we hear and what we see. In Deuteronomy 4:44, Moses says, this is the law which Moses set before the children of Israel. And then from here on, he's going to repeat and add some things to the law that we haven't had before. And I don't have time to go over them. But these covenants, we're liable for them. Our ancestors made promises to Yahweh with them. And when we join Israel, we make promises regarding them. The Torah is love. But it is not according to the world's definition of love or people's religious ideas about love. Yahweh loves us by keeping his oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, by making Israel such a great nation that they can come directly to him, something which the nations cannot do. He gave Israel a great law of wisdom. He is the God that will not fail us or forget his covenant in Deuteronomy 4:31. He lets us come directly to him, as I said, and he blesses us above all people. He takes away our sicknesses in Deuteronomy 7:15. And he casts out the people who do not belong in Israel, Deuteronomy 7:22. And we are to love Yahweh by keeping all of his law, Deuteronomy 4:1-2, 5 and 6, 5 verses 1-33, and 6 verses 1-25, and all of chapter 7. We are to avoid images, Exodus 20:4, Deuteronomy 4:15-31, and Deuteronomy 5:8. And we're not to go after other gods. And by the way, Deuteronomy 4:26, he says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day. That's about images. That's not about going after other gods. He says that before he says anything else about going after other gods. If you're God and you're going to call heaven and the earth to witness about something, wouldn't it be about people going after other gods? No, he calls heaven and earth to witness about them going after images. We are to not go after other gods, and we are to love him with all of our heart, soul, and strength. Deuteronomy 6:5. Israel now has a 3,500-year history to show us why Yahweh commanded us about hearing and doing his law and avoiding all images in all forms. We have seen with our own eyes over the last 3,500 years the result of using our eyes first instead of our ears. And that result has been the exiling of Yahweh's people all over the earth. So we should now, at the end of days, know the answer to this object lesson, because there is a great big image test coming, and we want to avoid seeing it with our eyes. What we want to see with our eyes is Yahweh's promise coming to pass when he destroys all of that. That's what we're to see with our eyes. And that concludes today's Torah teaching.